Welcome to Right Now. I'm your host, Stacey Chadwell, coming to you live from Las Vegas.
Joining me tonight is Patrick Schwartzager, the author of Marketing Shortcuts for the Self-Employed, and is a regular speaker for Bloomberg TV. He has spoken about modern entrepreneurship, online branding, and the social media revolution at conferences and business events around the world. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Patrick. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hey, I'm thrilled to be on your show, Stacey. Thanks for having me.
So what inspires you to write?
Well, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people think that there's a more extensive cause than the reality. I mean, for me, when I'm, you know, I'm self-employed myself, I've been self-employed for most of my life, and when I figure something out online or in my marketing or in my business, I get really excited about it. And at the end, you know, people always say that, you know, why would you share your secrets? Well, the fact is, it's great to tell people when you figured something out. I get excited about it, and I like to share it with other people. And when they use it and they see success, it just, the whole thing feeds, and it's rewarding for me, and it's fun for them as well.
So when and why did you begin to write?
Well, that's maybe the more interesting story of the two, Stacey, because my most recent book, Marketing Shortcuts, I mean, it has 80 chapters in it, 80 chapters. There's a ton of chapters, but they're each like 2 and 3 pages long. And the reason for that format is because it started out as an email course. I actually had an email course on my website. I was trying to build a list of email addresses, people who I could stay in touch with and so forth, to build my business. And so I put together this program where people could subscribe and get one email every week for a year. And this thing started, and people started signing up, and it really ended up taking off. And a whole bunch of people signed up for it, and I ended up getting a lot of feedback that I should take this and put it into a book. So it's really interesting because I've written 3 books so far, and in a way, none of them were intended to be books when it first started. But it's gone that way just because the content was good and people loved it, and so I compiled it into a book.
That's impressive. It's funny how that works out, isn't it? You had at least 52 chapters written before
we'll talk about this later on, I'm sure, but it really was an amazing process to be a part of because I wrote, you know, a lot of people would hear something like that and they would say, gosh, I don't want to, you know, I don't have to, how can I possibly write 52 emails to get started? Well, I hadn't written 52 emails to get started. In fact, I'd only written 2 at the time when I launched the program. What I did do is I put together an entire outline. So I knew what every week's tip, every chapter, well, they weren't chapters at the time, but every email, I knew what they were going to be about, but I hadn't actually written them. I'd only written 2. And then when I launched the program, I subscribed to it myself. I was the first subscriber, so I just had to stay in front of myself, right? I mean, as the days went by, I would get an email and say, okay, I've got 7 days to write the next one. I've got 7 days to write the next one. And this went on and on for an entire year. And I was forced, because of the program I had put together, to constantly get back and write those individual emails. And so by the time it was finished, I literally wrote the last email just 2 or 3 days before the 1 year anniversary of the program. So it forced me to do it, you know, in bite-sized pieces, which is, I think, what writers really should do. That's the way to get it done.
Very good. So how do you define writing success?
You know, when I first came out with Webify Your Business, which is the precursor to Marketing Shortcuts, you see, I've written 3 books. The first 2 I self-published, and the second one was Webify Your Business, and that was, it had 60 chapters at that point, so that was the 52 emails plus 8 new chapters. And then that book really did quite well as a self-published book, and so Wiley, which is a national publisher, they approached me and said, we'd like to re-release it. And so at that point, you know, I took 6 chapters out because they were a little bit outdated, and we added 26 new chapters, and so that was 80 chapters, and that is what is now Marketing Shortcuts. But in any case, when I came out with Webify, you know, I started selling the book at my speaking engagements and so on, and people would buy the book. And at one point, a lady came up to me, and she had purchased the book about 6 weeks earlier. This was right at the beginning. This is like 1.5 years ago, 2 years ago. And she asked me to sign the book, which is another thing, which is you kind of have to get used to it. At the beginning, I was like, wow, this is crazy. But people do want you to sign the book, and so she asked me to sign the book. Well, Stacey, you should have seen it. This thing looked like it had been to Fallujah and back. I mean, it was torn up. It had sticky notes everywhere, and and highlighter marks and little squiggly lines and notes in the margins and everything. I couldn't believe it. I just thought, gosh, this is unbelievable. And as intimidating as that is, I mean, you really feel pretty vulnerable at that point, but it's also just unbelievably rewarding to see that something that you've written has really been used and engaged with by somebody else who you don't know. I didn't know this lady who came up to me, and this has happened to me so many times since. And I think a lot of times writers, they judge their success by, you know, the number of books that they've sold, and of course it's very important, particularly if you're, you know, published by a traditional publisher. That's very, very important. But for me personally, that day was really the first time where I was like, this is a success. I mean, this is incredible. The fact that something I did touched someone else's life is, you know, for me, the most rewarding thing you could ask for.
And it was very clear that she saw the value in it because of all the sticky notes and the notes in there. So it showed you how valuable it was, at least to one person. You reached out and touched that person, and that's what we're all striving for, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this has happened to me so many times since. In fact, I have a video on YouTube of someone who I met with who asked me to speak for an organization that he's in charge of, and he showed me his book, and he had taken it to a local Kinko's, and Webify Your Business was a paperback. Marketing Shortcuts is a hardcover, but Webify was a paperback, and he had taken it to a local Kinko's store, and they had shaved off the margin and put holes in it and made it into a spiral-bound book. And I was like, this is unbelievable. And, I took a video of it because I was so impressed with it. And his, too. It's just full of little notes and everything else. You know, every one of the chapters ends with an itemized to-do list. So people really get into those to-do lists. I've really learned that if there's one thing people should do to make their books more engaging is give homework. Give homework. No matter what you do, even on blogging or anything you do online, always give homework. Those to-do lists, people love them, and it's something that forces them to take action, and I think that's what gets them excited about the content.
Well, so what? A little bit more personal about you. What is your most powerful moment, writing moment?
Gosh, Stacey, it's really interesting. I mean, these things, I think probably anyone who's listening or yourself certainly as well, we can agree that, you know, sometimes you're doing something and it's not necessarily writing. I mean, it could be anything. It could be exercise. It could be painting, or it could be, for me, once years ago, I was building a huge Excel-based model. It was a demographic forecasting model. And that made, you know, I'm a geek. I mean, I get excited about these sorts of things. And I built this massive Excel spreadsheet that had, you know, 23 worksheets, and it was like 14 gigs. It was really a huge file. But in any case, you get into a mode where you forget where you are, and you forget the time, and you forget whether you've eaten recently or not, or if you're hungry or thirsty, or if you have to go to the bathroom. You just kind of get into this zone where you're completely in that moment. And sometimes I wish I could create it deliberately, and I can't. I try to sometimes get into that zone, but I can never fully predict whether or not I'm going to get into that moment or if I'm not. But sometimes I do, and I remember during that year when I was writing those emails, and sometimes I would write 3 or 4 of them in one day. I remember one day I actually wrote 8 of them all in one day, and that was one of those moments. And there was a few of them during the year where I just kind of got into the zone. And I think maybe when you were asking the question, you're probably thinking of something more tactical that I could point to, and I really wish I could, but it's just, when you really get into the content, you see the content from the recipient's eyes rather than yours as the writer, and you see how they might engage with it. I just, sometimes it happens, and I just get into that zone, and the typing just takes care of itself. Those are the moments I search for, and I can't recreate it on demand, but when they come, I really, really love it.
Oh, yeah. So you write from your passion and inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always, you know, for me, I'm inherently curious. I try a million things, and by the way, a lot of things I try fail. I mean, in fact, my next book is going to be the first book that I'm actually going to write with the intention of it being a book, and it's going to be called Failure Way to Success, because that's you know, basically the way my life has unfolded. I mean, I try a ton of things, and a lot of them don't work. But when things do work, when you try something and you actually get a result, and you get, you know, 30 views of your video in the first day, or you get 4 emails to your blog post, you know, in the first day or whatever, you think, wow, this really worked. And that's when I really, that's the exciting part for me. And when I find that, then I want to share it with others.
Well, speaking of things that work for you, what are the three most important personal tips that you could share for achievement in writing that you personally use?
Yeah, well, this gets back to what we were speaking about earlier on. Having an outline, to me, is just so critical. It's almost bigger than the writing itself. And I know that may sound overly simplistic, but if you start writing your outline, and maybe, you know, if someone's aspiring to write a book, even if they spent 1 hour every day for a week, so we're talking about 7 hours, and just start fleshing out, and here's what happens. You end up with, like, maybe 5 points, right, the 5 major things you want to talk about in your book. But then your mind starts, I think your subconscious mind, you're thinking about it, and a lot of this happens on day 2, 3, and 4. You know, the first day, you're kind of stumped. At least I was. I was like, gosh, what am I going to talk about here? But then it kind of gestates in your mind. So it's on day 2, 3, and 4 where all of a sudden you start looking at those 4 or 5 points that you started with, and you think, gosh, that third point is really like 4 sub-points. There's different things that I could talk about in that particular point. And item number 4, that's really 2 or 3 of its own, and maybe the 4 should come before the 3, and you start rearranging, and it builds out, builds. And for myself, when I did the outline for my very first book and then also the one for that email course, by the time I got to the 4th, 5th, 6th day, those outlines were, you know, 3, 4, 5 pages long with all kinds of sub-points, and things have been rearranged 1,000 times, and all of a sudden the whole... It's like, I remember one time I was in L.A. and I was driving down the 10 freeway towards downtown, and it was my first time I'd ever been in L.A. And I was looking at the map, and I was like, gosh, I should be right downtown, but I can't see any buildings. So I kept driving. And eventually, you know, there's so much haze in L.A., at least this particular day, there was so much haze. All of a sudden, the buildings started to come clear. They were right in front of me. I didn't even see them because there was so much haze in the air. And all of a sudden, they started to come clear right in front of me. I was in downtown already. You know, I was within 1/2 mile of those buildings. So I think the same thing happens when you build that outline, is that, you know, you get to the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th day, all of a sudden it starts to become clear, and you start to see what the real message is and what the progression is going to be and how it's going to unfold. So I know that's a long way of saying one tip, but I really think that, you know, writing that outline and spending time on that is a critical first step. And then when it comes down, you know, to the point where you have to actually write it, it's a lot easier to just go back to that outline and scratch one more thing off the list and write that one out, and you already know what's coming before it, what's going to come after, so you can keep it in context, and the whole process goes a lot smoother. So for a second tip, you know, my whole book is basically about internet marketing and online marketing and how you can spread the word online. And of course, that's a major part of marketing your book as well. So this is maybe, you know, after the part, at the point where you've already published the book, but I think it's really, really important. The biggest thing that people don't have when they're marketing things online, whether it's, you know, any kind of a business, so picture like anything, a lawyer or a financial advisor or an insurance agent, they always struggle with content. What are they going to put out on the internet? And that's the one area where writers get it for free. This is what we do. Like, we are content creators, and that is what distinguishes us apart from almost everybody else, more than, you know, more importantly than any other characteristic you could look at. We love producing content. We love writing. That means we have content to share. And I know we're going to get to this a little bit later on, but you can take that content and kind of syndicate it and recreate it and modify it. You're not giving the book away for free, but you're giving kind of pieces of it away for free. And they're in so many different places that nobody could realistically put it back together again. But because that content is out there, it all serves as like multiple little mini salespeople that are out there on the internet, and different people can find that content and think, gosh, this is great stuff. I want to learn more, and all that content can point back to the website where the book is available for sale. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
And the third thing, the third tip that I would share really is more of a motivational point than anything else. Have that final destination in mind of what it is you're looking to create and how you're looking to touch people's lives. And, you know, always, whenever you're writing anything, always think about, like when I used to write those tips for people to use in their businesses, I always used to try and picture what's going to be the impact of this on somebody's business. And always try and think from the recipient's point of view rather than your own as the writer, because it changes the way you word things. It changes the phraseology that you use. It changes your approach in writing. And when the readers read it, I'm convinced that they can sense that you were thinking of that way when you wrote it. It's these subtle changes of how you word things. Like, it's never a question of being instructional and telling someone what to do. It's more a question of encouraging and guiding what somebody does. And that's a subtle change, but I think it's one that makes the book far more welcoming once it's finally finished than if it's just a series of to-do items and telling people to do things in an authoritative style.
I completely agree with you. I love your three tips, Patrick. Thank you so much for sharing those. Is there anything that you find particularly challenging in your writing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same as everyone. I'm sure it's the same with you. It's time. I mean, time is so, it's difficult. It's difficult to allocate the time. Like, for example, I have this new book project that I want to get started on, and I have the outline. The outline's finished, and it's like 9 pages long, so it's very, very detailed. But it's, you know, we're all busy. I'm sure you're busy, and I'm busy, and all your listeners are busy. How do you allocate the time to actually get it done? And for me, I write, you know, roughly I can write for about 3 hours before my brain just completely turns to jelly. And in that amount of time, I can usually write roughly 1,000 words or 2,000 words, maybe call it 1,500 words, if I really try and do it straight. So, you know, you kind of do the math on how much time is required to actually get the book done. And if you broke it up into pieces where you're writing for, say, 1-2 hours a day, 4 days a week, it's amazing how much you can get done in a single month. But how do you allocate that time? And for me, that's the single biggest challenge. I'm a speaker, so I'm traveling around. I just got back from Cancun. I was speaking down there, and I'm leaving for Detroit in another week. So I'm constantly in and out of town. I'm in airports, and it's really, really hard to schedule that time.
That's an excellent point. You mentor writers on how to market, because I know the authors have, while they're very good at writing their own content to help market themselves, they're often surprised how much they actually have to do the marketing work. So how do you, and I know that you understand and help people with this, so what is the number one issue that you see writers facing, new writers facing?
In terms of their marketing, I mean, it's what you just said. They have no idea that, I mean, they do in the self-published world, because in the self-publishing world, they know no one else is involved. It's only them. But when you're with a national publisher, a lot of people assume that publisher is going to do all kinds of marketing on their behalf. That is absolutely not true. It is absolutely not true. I wish it was true, but they don't do much of anything. It's especially when it's your first book. As far as they're concerned, you are a first-time, unproven author. And as such, the onus of responsibility is on you to get the process started. And I think for most writers, the number one challenge they have is, number one, they don't realize that the responsibility is theirs. But once they do realize it, writers are not particularly good marketers. They have no idea how to get started. And just the whole, I mean, for myself, building my career as a speaker, that was, a journey that involved a lot of trials and tribulations and errors along the way, and getting radio interviews just like this one, for example, and many others. I mean, there's a learning process in place, and these people they don't know how to get that process started.
And you help them with that, don't you?
Well, yes, certainly. I mean, in fact, you know, without being entirely self-aggrandizing here, is exactly what the book is about. I mean, the book is really about how self-employed people can market themselves and get the word out. But certainly writers are self-employed in their own way, and a lot of the same strategies apply. So, yeah, absolutely. I help them with that, and so does the book.
Well, do you have any advice for other writers?
I think the biggest thing you look out into the Internet and into our social economy and the way the Internet is evolving, there's a huge change that's taking place. And the change is that you kind of look back throughout history and you can look back 1,000 years. People have always looked at the source of the content first and then what the content was. Okay, so in other words, who are you came first. What did you say came second. So, for example, someone might say, okay, this is in the New York Times, therefore it must be credible information. Or this was on TV, therefore it's credible information. Or this was taught in a university, therefore it's credible information. That's what's changed today. People look at the content first on today's social Internet. And the reason they do that is because all of these social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, LinkedIn, and dozens of others, they all provide some way where people can endorse the content of their peers, right? So you can like the page on Facebook, or you can follow the person on Twitter. You can embed their YouTube video on your blog. They all call it something different, but essentially there's always a way for one person to look at someone else and say, that's good quality content, and then they can share it with their network, and then someone in their network might share it, and someone in their network might share it. So the whole process can take on a life of its own. And because of that, people are looking at the content before they're asking where it came from. And this is incredibly powerful. I mean, you look at even the president of our country, right, Barack Obama, whether you like him or hate him, the politics are irrelevant. But that guy was nobody 10 years ago. He was nobody. And now he's the president of the United States. How does that happen? It happens because today people can share their content, and if their peer group endorses their content and spreads the word, it can take on a life of its own. And so these virtual nobodies, right, insignificant players can come up and virtually dominate industries and take on industry giants because they've got dynamic content. And that's really the message that I have for not just writers but business people in general, is that there has never been a better opportunity for the little guy, the newbie, the person who's not endorsed by Princeton University yet, right? Someone who's just a relative nobody but who has great quality content. The opportunity's never been greater to get that content out there, have it endorsed by their peer group, and building an entire career without asking anybody's permission.
Oh, predominantly almost for free.
All these different strategies on the Internet, I mean, 99% of them don't cost a penny. What they cost is time. It does cost time. It takes time to get this stuff done. But it doesn't cost any money, and the results can be unbelievable.
Well, the way I look at it, it's not a question of whether or not you're going to be part of social media and getting out there. It's a question of when you're going to. So are you going to be the front, the middle, or running to catch up? So,
And I'll say something else, is that a lot of people think that it's too late. Everyone else is already doing it. There's no way that they can get any traction. That's not true. The vast majority of people on, say, Twitter, the vast majority of people are wasting their time. There's 100 million people on Twitter today. Most of them are wasting their time. They might be having fun. They might be being social, but they're not driving revenue. They're not finding new clients because they're sharing this incredibly insignificant, stupid content, things like, I'm going to go get a taco, right?
Right.
And meanwhile, if you share really dynamic content, and if I may, Stacey, I actually talk about this a lot in my presentations. What I view as kind of a winning formula for social media success. Can I go into that briefly?
Please, I'd love it.
Well, it all starts, and again, I know I'm speaking to an audience of writers, but think creatively about what I'm saying, because there's always an application. It starts with what do you do that's truly remarkable? And you think about the definition of the word remarkable, something worth remarking about. Right? What do you do that's worth remarking about? Or in the case of your writing, what is it about your writing that is truly remarkable? Okay. Now, the second thing is, how can you demonstrate that thing, that remarkable thing, in a visual way? Okay, there's different types of content out there. There's text, there's audio, there's photos, and there's video. Well, obviously, books are in text format, but in social media, what's the content format that is most viral? So what's the content that has the highest probability of being passed along by people who find it? Well, it turns out that video content is by far the most viral. People are most willing to pass along video content. What's number two? Photos. People like engaging with visual content. So how can you demonstrate what you do that's remarkable in a visual way? And then you can go even one step further, because that content can come from one of two places. So either you can create the content about yourself, about your own products and services, and get that content out into the social web, or your customers could produce that content about your business. Which of those two is more viral? The stuff from your customers, right? The stuff from your customers, that's what's viral. That's a third-party endorsement. So how can you incentivize your customers, or let's say in this case your readers, how can you incentivize your readers to share what you do that's remarkable in a visual way? That's a winning formula. That's the kind of stuff that can really get passed along. That's the kind of stuff that can help you change your business.
And can launch you ahead of the pack.
Yeah. And if you, Stacey, if you started doing this today, or if one of your listeners have never done any of this and they sit down and figure out a strategy and start it tomorrow, and they're smart about it, they can go out into the social web and see incredible results, even if they get started tomorrow for the first time.
I completely agree. So on that note, where can entrepreneurs get ideas for remarkable content, since you brought it up?
Jumping off of that. Well, I mean, there's a lot of play. And, of course, again, we're talking about writers here, so a lot of people on this audience don't have any trouble coming up with remarkable content. But let's talk about some ideas where you can really get out of the box and expand your own, you know, the ideas that are already in your mind. The first thing I recommend is to subscribe to the top bloggers in your field. So you're, you know, in whatever field it is, and again, we're all writers, but we're all writing about different things. So think about whatever it is you write about and search for that. You probably know who they are already because they're well-known names in your industry. Well, subscribe to those top bloggers. And you can subscribe, actually, through what's called a reader. And if you're not familiar with that, don't worry about it. But, like, for example, Google has one. So you can just go to Google and search for Google Reader, and you'll find it immediately. And it's just a place where you can put all your subscriptions to these different blogs in one place so that when you log on, it's kind of like a newspaper, and it has all the latest posts from all the people who you're subscribed to. Well, if you do that, every time you sit down to write another chapter or write another blog post on your blog or create any kind of content at all, go to that reader first. And literally, it'll take 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops. And just look down those titles and see what people are blogging about. And if you do that, you're always going to be kept right up to the date on the latest buzz that's taking place in your industry. And you're going to have access to the opinions about that buzz coming from the top bloggers in your industry. I guarantee this happens to me every single time I do it. You always end up with two or three new ideas after you look through that you didn't have before. And where do those ideas go? They go right back into your outline. Right? You think, gosh, that's a great topic. I need to cover that. I don't have time to do that today, but I'm going to have time to do it later. So you put it in that outline, and you accumulate those ideas and just keep building them up. Now, the other thing is that, you know, there's so many different utilities and tools that you can use on the Internet, and one of them is called the Google Keyword Tool. The Google Keyword Tool, and again, you could go to Google and just search for Google Keyword Tool. You'll find it right away. And it's a place where you can put in a keyword or a keyword phrase, two or three words, into there and click search, and it's going to go through the Google database and present you with a list of all of the related keyword phrases that people have been using Google to search for. And it'll tell you how many times each one of those phrases has been searched for, which means you can sort the list by either the local search volume or the global search volume and find out immediately what other people are searching for. And you know what, Stacy? The same thing happens. You look down that list, and invariably you see a few phrases where you're like, wow, look at this. They're searching for that? I never would have guessed that they're searching for that, but they are. And maybe there's, you know, 3 million people a month or whatever it might be searching for that particular phrase. So you go down, and immediately, again, you're going to find ideas of things that you could blog about. You'll see the phrase and say, gosh, I could write a blog post about that. I could write a blog post about this or write a chapter or add something to my book. And what you're inevitably doing is customizing your content for what, for precisely what the public is looking for. That was never possible 10 years ago, 20 years ago. You had to do focus groups or surveys or something like that. But today, you can find out with precision exactly what everybody out there is searching for and then tailor your content to answer those questions. And the last one that I'll say, you know, I mean, of course, there's tons of ideas here, but there's one more that, again, it's so simple, but it's so effective, is just to go into your local convenience store and go to the places where all the magazines are up there on the racks and find a few magazines that are in your industry, whatever industry that might be, and look at the titles that are on those magazine covers. See, these magazines, they spend millions of dollars doing research and finding out what people want to read, and then even more importantly, crafting the perfect title that's enticing enough to get people to want to buy that magazine. You know, there's so much in the title, and you, even in books, you can look at books that have tremendous titles. One of my favorites was written by a guy called Tim Ferriss. I'm sure you're familiar with Tim Ferriss. But for anyone who's not, he wrote a book called, get this, The 4-Hour Workweek. That's a pretty good start, The 4-Hour Workweek. And then the subtitle of that book is incredible, Escape 9-to-5. I love the use of the word escape in this context. Escape 9-to-5, live anywhere, and join the new rich. Who wouldn't want to buy that book? Right? Meanwhile,
exactly.
It's spectacular. And meanwhile, we all have the opportunity to go into your local convenience store, look at those magazines. In some cases, you can take the title that's on the cover and use it yourself. If you're just using the title, you're not stealing really that much. But at the very least, you're getting a lot of inspiration of what types of titles people want to engage with. And I had a lot of ideas. You know, Marketing Shortcuts for the Self-Employed is a very simple title, and frankly, Wiley had more to do with its selection than I did. But what they really wanted was a title that was very easy to understand, that people could understand right away and know what it is they're buying. And I think a big part of that is because I am a first-time author, at least from the perspective of a national publisher. But for the next book, Fail Your Way to Success. I love that title. I think it tells people that it's okay to have flaws and you can still succeed despite them. And I think there's a lot in the title, and we can all get inspiration from those magazines.
I think those were wonderful ideas because, like you said, why not let the magazines have paid for all the research on what appeals to men and to women, and take that. I think you're saving them a ton of money just thinking about it in that way, how to market to these same people, but in a clear way without having to get the, what, MBA in marketing?
Yeah, and spend all the money doing the research. I mean, I think a lot of people, including perhaps you and me, I know it's true to some extent for myself, you look at some of the titles on magazines and they seem really kind of schleppy and cheap.
Right.
And I'm not suggesting you take those low-level titles and use them yourselves, but there are some great ones too. And sometimes you see a title that's so clever, and you could take it verbatim or you could just adjust a few words here and there and end up with a great title for maybe a chapter in your book or even the book itself.
yeah, you know it appeals to you. So if it appeals to you, it's probably a good start.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So, but isn't there a lot of content out there already? I mean, because you're recommending that they put more content out there. Don't you think there's enough content out there already?
Yeah, I mean, there's tons. And this is what we alluded to this just moments ago. People, they're reluctant to get started because they think, gosh, there's so much stuff out there already. It's too late for me. I can't get on that trend. And I actually really disagree with that. Most of the content that's out there, just isn't very good. I mean, truthfully, it just isn't. And in fact, ask yourself the question, is everything on the Internet true? Right? I mean, of course not. Is it all well written? Of course not. Now, is that good or bad, right? That's the most important question. There is a natural human instinct, and I have it too, that says it's bad. I'm sure we've all gone to the Internet and found something on the Internet where we're like, that's not true. How can they write that? That is not, it is factually untrue. How can they post it? And it's frustrating. Certainly for me, it's very frustrating when I see stuff like that. But despite that reality, which is frustrating for me as well, despite that reality, it also represents a huge opportunity because the good quality content does get found. You know, for me, this whole thing kind of started because I put a podcast about the U.S. mortgage industry up on iTunes Music Store. This is back in 2006, before the meltdown and all this, all the chaos. It was years ago. But it was an introduction, and I had 15 chapters and then a conclusion. And it was really good quality content. And I posted the introduction. I did the introduction and posted it. And then 6 days later, I went back and I recorded my chapter one, and I uploaded that as well. And when I uploaded it, the platform said that my introduction had been downloaded 17 times in the last
six months. Wow.
Like 17 times? Who the heck are these people? I never told anybody I did it. I just put the information up there, and they found it. And so I was like, gosh, this is interesting. And so I put chapter one and chapter two, and I kind of did roughly one every week to get the content up there. And, I didn't get rich in the first week or the second week or even the third. But after the first or second month, my podcast series got written up on mortgagedaily.com, which was this website's actually based in Texas. And then another month went by and it got written up on Sparta Success, which is a real estate training company in Connecticut. And then 2 months went by and it got written up on about.com, which is a huge website. My downloads just spiked. At that point, my podcast was the third most popular mortgage-related podcast on iTunes.
Congratulations.
Oh, it was crazy. And I remember at the beginning, I'm like, who are these people? I mean, it got downloaded over 75,000 times in 27 countries. And I was thinking, these are people in Argentina and Holland and India who are downloading this information. And that's one of the messages that I repeat so often these days. You never know who is searching for the expertise you already have, or for the knowledge, or for the insights, or for the stories. You don't know who's searching for it. But when you put it online, people do find it, and sometimes it's incredible. You can't even imagine why they care. But there's people out there that do care. And if you do it consistently over time, the stuff gets found. And I often say that, in many cases, it's the people with the least to say who are the first to blog. Right? There's these people who they don't have anything to say at all, and they go out there and they start blogging. And then the people with good quality content, like many people in your audience, what do? We're like, I don't know. It's not perfect. I'm not going to post it, right? Because we're worried about negative comments, or we're worried about being vulnerable in public or being criticized. Put it out there. Put it done, not once. If you're going to do it once, don't bother. But put it out there consistently and start engaging and start sharing and providing value. And if you do that, you're going to be blown away by the people who end up following you, and you don't even know why they care, but they do. And in some cases, they're more passionate about what you do than you are. And that's the most rewarding part of all.
Patrick, I really appreciate you being on the show tonight. Do you have a website that you could share it with?
Yeah, I sure
do. Our listeners.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, too. I'm grateful for the opportunity. But the website, you know, as I said, Marketing Shortcuts has 80 chapters in it. So there's a lot of chapters. And so the URL, just to make it simple, the website address is 80, the number, 80, so not 79, but 80shortcuts.com. 80shortcuts.com. And in fact, I even I put a page up. It's not public, so if you went to the website, you're not going to find it. But I'll tell you what it is. It's 80shortcuts.com/gifts, the word gifts, plural, G-I-F-T-S. If you go to that page, then I've put, you know, of the 80 chapters, I have worksheets to accompany 77 of them. And I put all 77 worksheets up there. You don't have to put an email address or anything like that. You can just download them directly. And I also put 4 training videos up there. So if you're interested in this content or the approach or some of the things you can learn, please go check that out. It's free resources. Obviously, if you'd like to buy the book, that's great as well. But these resources are free of charge.
That's very generous of you. Patrick, thank you so much again for being on the show. If you would like more information about Patrick Swartzager, please go to the GetEI.com website. That's GETEI.com, where you can find out more information about Patrick Swartzager, as well as his website and the link he just shared with you to receive his free gift. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on Right Now. I'm Stacey Chabot. Have an excellent week.